Well, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And for this part two with Dr. Dudley Danoff, we're going to once again unzip the secrets of male sexual health and power. Welcome to this program. Again, you were here February the 18th, and so good to have you back, Dr. Danoff. Do we have Dr. Danoff there?
Here I am.
Oh, good. Hello.
Hello.
It's nice to have you back. Welcome.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Good. So I wanted to tell our audience who didn't hear the show, of course, they can go back and listen to the archived version, but you're the president and founder of the Cedars-Sinai Tower Urology Medical Group in Los Angeles, and you've been teaching on the clinical faculty at the UCLA School of Medicine for, what, 20 years maybe? Maybe more. I know you've been in practice for about 40, but...
I was on a faculty at UCLA for more than a quarter of a century.
Okay, great, great. So good to have you back. Thank you for joining this program again. And the book that people can see up by the archived version is a great book, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. And I asked you this question last time, but I think it's a question we need to ask again. Why did you write this book?
Well, let me set the record straight. I am a middle-of-the-road, a urologic oncologist who spends his day mostly taking out prostate cancers and kidney cancers and doing kidney transplants. And I just had this idea of a silly title to a book, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. So we want to set it straight that the word penis is not a pejorative word. It's a body part. A penis is to a urologist what a stomach is to a gastroenterologist or a heart is to a cardiologist. So it's a funny book. It's medically actual and factual. It's well written and easy to understand for the layman.
But, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
But the main reason that I wrote this book, the truth of the matter that most men and essentially almost all women are woefully ignorant about the penis, the male sexual apparatus in general. And, you know, it's really sad because men are what I call penocentric. In many respects, the penis is the organ of a man's essence. I mean, it's the axis around which the male body and personality rotate. And men are the same in the bedroom as they are in the boardroom, living room, or factory. And I wanted to get the word out there, the real facts, and I've had a great time doing it.
Yes, and I want to go back to what you said because I so believe this. I figured out, with the help of my brilliantly mathematical son, that I have probably seen about 30,000 patients over the years. And what I've noticed is that women tend to have very little understanding of male sexual health. And that's a big problem because if the man has a problem, the woman has a problem. I say to them, you have a couple's problem. And indeed they do. And I'm so interested in this. I love being a sex therapist and I love interviewing people like yourself. I mean, you're a really remarkable man, Dr. Danoff. But I'm also very lucky because my partner and lover is a rare man who actually knows how his body works and how it can work better to pleasure me. Now, isn't that a great combination?
Absolutely. You're a very, very fortunate lady.
I agree. And I count my blessings every day. So we want to talk about, to start this program with... Well, your chapter 9 is called The Life Story of the Penis, and so you take it through its various stages. And can you just give our listening audience what happens to the teenage boy and his penis, and then we're going to focus a little bit more on what happens past 50. But
surely.
Yeah, thank you.
Surely. I mean, look, the bottom line is you're only as old as you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So the expression that it takes me all night long to do what I used to do all night long certainly typifies the life cycle of the penis.
Mm-hmm.
So in a post-pubescent boy, I mean, he has an erection 24/7. He can ejaculate, you know, 4 or 5 times in a day with a very short refractory period. And as he ages, all those things slow down. So he gets a less frequent erection. He can ejaculate less frequently. He needs a longer a refractory period to recover the strength. But it's no less fun, and the attitude should be no less the same. I'm often reminded of, I think the quote was attributed to the great country and western singer Willie Nelson, who said, "I have but one regret." He said that my dick died before I did. So I.
that's sad. And he smokes a lot of marijuana, which for some people is actually like an aphrodisiac, in that they report that they feel more sensual feelings. Do you have a comment on that?
Well, I certainly think it dulls the sensorium, you know, more than anything else, and I think it has a supertentorial effect more than a physical effect on the penis. So it definitely alters your perception of reality. You know, there's a lot of inhibitions involved in sexuality among my patients, and one of the things that cannabis does is gets rid of those inhibitions. I could tell you what's the worst thing for sexuality and male potency is the use of cocaine, which is a very potent vasoconstrictor. It restricts all of the blood vessels. So, marijuana, I guess, in small doses, just like alcohol, moderate alcohol, is probably helps most people sexually.
Yes, and moderate. I think in your book somewhere, you quote Shakespeare in King Lear.
Yeah, I think it says something like, "Alcohol addeth to the desire, but taketh from the performance." That's a very loose.
That's pretty much it. And
yeah.
Shakespeare knew a thing or two, didn't he?
He sure did. Lots of things.
Lots of things, and so as a man ages, there are trade-offs, aren't there? And you talk about them very well. You say in this chapter, As Old As You Feel, The Life Story of the Penis, the good news is that with age comes increased experience, wisdom, and seasoning, and that the wisdom and sexual insight can be used to your advantage. Would you expand on that, Dr. Danoff?
Well, I think certainly we hope that as you age, you gain wisdom. I mean, I have so many patients and so many acquaintances who have aged and continue to make the same mistakes and have clouded their mind with the same poor issues as they did, you know, in their early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But for most people, if they don't learn by their mistakes, they are destined to repeat them.
Mm-hmm.
So most people, as they age, do learn from their experience. I mean, one of the great joys of growing older, in the younger man, premature ejaculation is a real problem.
Right.
And in an older man, because everything is slowed down, most of my older patients still get an adequate erection, but they have to work a little bit harder and have to be more stimulated to ejaculate. So if longevity or duration of the act is one of your objectives, I think all of your listeners should wait until they get a little bit older, because they will be rewarded.
Exactly. And you also say that the best triad when you are an older person to navigate all of this, the intricate workings of sexual relationships as an older person, is communication, awareness, and consideration. That's brilliant, Dr. Danoff, because it really encapsulates those three aspects: communication, awareness, and consideration. Consideration, like some guys really can go a long time as they're older without ejaculating and have longer intercourse, but for some of their partners, it may not be so comfortable. So that's where it seems to me the consideration part comes in.
Well, I mean, look, everything about love and everything about romance has very little to do with me, me, me. I think if you're a me, me, me person, you are destined to be a failure at love and intimacy. So it's really about we, and maybe if you're a real superhero, it's mainly about you and very little about me. So I think the more it is about you and the less it is about me, the greater lover you will be.
Yeah. Brian, my guy, he says, worship the goddess and she will reward you with pleasure. He says it better than that, but that's the gist of it.
Oh,
I like that. I like that a lot.
I think that's right on.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly am no male chauvinist, but... and I say what I'm about to say with great caution.
Yes.
Married a long time. I have an adult daughter who's a lawyer who is not shy to speak up. And I think it's very important for a woman, and I have a whole chapter in my book, Penis Power, dedicated to women. Every woman needs to be a penis professor. She needs to know how the penis in her life works, what makes it happy. What to do, when to do it, how to do it. And the more she understands that, the more benefits she will get out of a relationship. And that's said in a sense of true partnership.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And sex education, and I've narrated a number of sex education videos for the Sinclair Institute, but sex education really is empowering. And people need to know more, women and men. And then the woman is more comfortable pleasuring her guy. And if she knows how his penis works and if she knows more about his scrotum and all those parts down there, and you even write about the taint, that would be the perineum.
Right.
And we're going to get into that a little bit later. I'm going to give the audience a tease because that... that can help with help inhibit ejaculation if the guy has premature ejaculation, right?
Yes. Correct.
Yes. So, what else about sexuality and aging? And there's so much here, and I've specialized in this for years because, as a gerontologist, I've studied sexuality and aging. But you have some very, very good points, and one of them is, well, what if the guy doesn't get a full erection? So the partner, she may start to think about something is wrong with her. And you point out that having a sense of humor can really make a difference. And laugh in bed. And, you know, we're not doing brain surgery here. This is sex. So keep it light.
I mean, I agree. I mean, you know, that's more fun than you can have doing almost anything.
Yes.
And you certainly have to have a great sense of humor. You know, it sometimes is very awkward. And as you get older, you know, body positions become more difficult to assume. I have to lean on my elbow. I have to stand on my knee. My neck hurts. Uh-oh, be careful of my bad knee. Uh-oh.
Right, right. And you make adjustments and accommodations. Hmm?
But I also think that as I see my patients aging, I mean, when I started in practice, it was very unusual for me to see perhaps, you know, 100-year-old person a month. Well, I see now in my practice a 100-year-old patient a week. Now,
that's amazing. That is just amazing.
Just amazing. So, you know, I think that today's 90 was 15 years ago 80, and today's 80 was 15 years ago 60. So people are living longer. They are living a healthier lifestyle. Because of diet, because of vitamins, because of our understanding of exercise and cardiovascular fitness and flexibility. So, you know, people are feeling better, and therefore their sexuality is going into the 80s and 90s. And I see that. And, you know, there are lots of 100-year-old patients that unfortunately don't realize they're 100 because they're non-compos mentis. But there's a...
Oh, Gary, yes.
there's a surprisingly large number, who are remarkably fit. I saw a 102-year-old guy came into my office the other day. He was fit. He was tan. He was erect. And he was remarkable. And I say, I can't believe you're 110 and no cane. And I mean, what is the secret of your success? He said, I swim every day for an hour, except one day a week on the Sabbath, I don't swim.
Swimming is a wonderful thing. I've been doing it for 30 years every morning, and it certainly has made a difference.
Yes.
But you mentioned when we last spoke on this program that you had a 100-year-old patient who was a little sad because he still wanted to have sex, and there is that circulating free testosterone, and if the man is healthy, he's likely to want it, but he couldn't find a female partner with whom to have sex.
Yeah, and look, at the end of the day, the parts just wear out, and I guess if you live long enough, you wear out all of your body parts, but I always thought it was marvelous when that fellow said, Dr. Danoff, I dream of it. I dream of penetration. So I said, well, leave it for the young guys. You've had enough. But you shouldn't give up. You really should never give up. And this brings us full circle to the use of the sex drugs, the so-called Viagra, Levitra, the PDE5 inhibitors. All of those drugs increase circulation and have definitely increased the ability of an older patient to get an erection firm enough for penetration. So those have really been revolutionary drugs, and I might add, very, very safe.
Very safe. I know that they've been studied a lot, particularly Viagra and Cialis, and now the daily Cialis in low doses, which, as I understand it, can keep the penis healthy because it keeps the blood circulating and it keeps the levels of nitric oxide up. Is that correct? Did I say that right?
Absolutely. And it's also been approved by the FDA for benign enlargement of the prostate, which is a very common condition in older men. So it serves two purposes, which, of course, is why it's a billion-dollar drug.
Wow. A billion with a B,
B, absolutely.
All right. So, good. And isn't that Eli Lilly who produces Cialis?
Yeah, I wish I knew it in advance and bought some Eli Lilly stock, but I wasn't.
Yeah. Indeed. Now, but you point out in your book, and this is very important because I know it's a misconception, and it's a misconception that may begin in some urologists' offices, if they don't take the time with the patient, and that is that Viagra or Cialis or Levitra can be libido enhancing. No,
these are not drugs.
So go ahead about that, because it's just about capacity, isn't it? Not.
Yeah. None of these drugs are drugs of desire. They're all drugs of performance. So take it, and it does not increase your desire, which is driven by your testosterone, but it does enhance the performance because it does get more blood to the place you want more blood to be.
Yeah, you mentioned testosterone. Now, testosterone therapy, and you write about this, and as a woman, I've been on BHRT, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, which includes testosterone.
Right.
And I love it. I think it's just great. But my doctor follows me carefully. I have regular blood tests and mammograms and all of that. So, but for a man, what about testosterone replacement therapy?
Well, it is a legitimate form of therapy. I mean, the facts are that every man after the age of 30 loses about 1% of his circulating testosterone a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do the arithmetic by 60 or by 70, a lot of men have very low serum testosterone. The diagnosis is called hypogonadism.
Yes.
And in those cases, testosterone replacement therapy, which we call TRT, absolutely legitimate. And the key is to bring the patient's testosterone level up to what we call normal levels, not hypogonadal levels.
And right.
Where men get into trouble and where you read about the incidence of pulmonary emboli and heart attacks,
mm-hmm.
the men are taking too much testosterone and they're getting their testosterone levels up, you know, to the sky. But
yes.
Keep the testosterone levels in the physiologic range, the normal range. They're very safe. They improve a man's mood. They get rid of the grumpy old man syndrome.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's sort of annoying at times, too, the grumpy old man.
Well, we all feel it, especially if our testosterone is down. It adds muscle mass. It decreases, you know, body fat. It gives you more energy.
And doesn't it also help with bone loss? I mean, you won't have as much bone loss.
Absolutely.
Osteoporosis, yes.
The problem is today mm-hmm. is that all of the drug companies have seen an enormous number of men who, as they age, become grumpy old men, get a little frumpy around the middle, you know, lose muscle mass, and they have now labeled this, quote, normal aging as hypogonadism. So they're selling this product, and you see it advertised every day on television, to men that don't really need it. They've created a disease which is not to be treated with testosterone replacement therapy. I mean, you have to have a really good medical reason, not because you're getting old and getting tired and getting frumpy. And so we have to really watch that.
Yes, and so many men are going to the Internet and buying testosterone online, and that's dangerous.
It's very, very dangerous. It's a tricky drug. It doesn't cause prostate cancer, for example, but if a man has a minute focus of prostate cancer, the testosterone will be fertilizer. It will be analogous to, you know, throwing cow manure on growing wheat. So men have to be very carefully monitored. Serum testosterone, rectal exam, PSA monitoring, it's a tricky business.
I read some time ago that some urologists were actually using testosterone when a man did have evidence of prostate cancer.
Well,
that's got to be controversial.
Well, not only is it controversial, but if I were a plaintiff's lawyer and I was defending a patient who had prostate cancer and was knowingly getting testosterone shots, I think I would have a very good malpractice case against the urologist or the doctor that's doing that, because that is so contraindicated that it's off the charts.
Interesting.
So again, testosterone replacement therapy does not in and of itself cause prostate cancer, but if you do have one, it certainly fertilizes it. And one of the hallmarks of treatment for prostate cancer is the withdrawal of testosterone. We actually do either an orchiectomy, which is the removal of the testicles, or a chemical orchiectomy, in which we use a drug that blocks the synthesis of testosterone. So we do just the opposite.
And is there estrogen in that drug?
There is not estrogen.
Oh, because I remember some guys, this was some years ago, some of my patients, where they actually took some estrogen drug.
Yeah, well, it's what happens is men produce a small amount of estrogen. So if you castrate a male, either castrate him chemically or castrate him surgically, estrogen will take over. And in the early treatment of prostate cancer, giving estrogen was considered to be therapeutic. That's fallen out of favor for lots of reasons, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is all fascinating, and I think that so many people just don't have this information. So thank you again for returning to this program. So you talk a lot in your book about the super potent man and how attitude is everything. Would you elaborate on that, please, Dr. Danoff?
Well, being a super potent man is a matter of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Erectile function and your ability to react sexually is 99% between your ears and 1% between the legs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, there are many exceptions to that rule. A patient with atherosclerosis, advanced diabetes. But in general, it's the power of positive thinking as applied to your penis, a man's penis. I mean, that's what makes a super potent man.
I like that. I also like, you make some very interesting points because you've had, being a urologist in Los Angeles, you've had not only movie stars in your practice, but also porn stars.
Yes, and so,
you know, people are always wondering about, oh, what about a movie star? What about a celebrity? What about a porn star? You write, take a look at some of the famous movie stars who are considered sexy enough, even though they are not blessed with classical good looks. I found this fascinating, and boy, do I agree with you. And you write about like Owen Wilson and Jack Nicholson, and these are guys that are not classically handsome, but they have sex appeal.
They do. So,
and they have a twinkle, don't they? And a
twinkle
and
in their eye.
A sense of humor, yes.
And they don't have to drop their pants to be sexy. That's for sure. The interesting thing about movie stars, to exclude porn stars at the moment. Men,
yeah, right. We'll talk about that maybe next.
You know, I tell my kids and I tell a lot of guests that come from out of town because we see these people in the restaurant, we see these people on the street, we see these people in the museum. I always say, look, they put their pants on just the way you do, one leg at a time, and when they go to the toilet, they use one or two squares of toilet paper, just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
Some of them are very nice, and some of them are very full of themselves. I said, unlike regular people that you meet. You know, their job is just being in front of a camera, and they happen to be blessed with either, good look, or charm, or
yes,
the trumpet, or can dance. But most of them are just regular people, and if you treat them with respect and treat them with dignity, just as you treat all patients, they can be the nicest in the world. I mean, some of them are, a real pain in the you-know-what, but it's very rare. But so are many patients, can be very annoying to the point of distraction.
Well, whether they're in the movie business or they're in the general population, a man can be nice or pretty narcissistic, pretty feeling self-entitled and lacking compassion and empathy, which are some of the features of narcissism.
And the absolutely antipathy of being what I call the superpotent man.
Of course, because the superpotent man is going to be very generous with his lover. He'll be very interested in her pleasure.
Right.
He'll get out of his own, I'm going to use the word fucking head, and really... Big head and little head, right? And really think about his partner, his lover.
Absolutely. And unless it is in a relationship about me, and I'm taking the view of the male, and the more it is about you as the woman, the more successful a lover you will be. And if you can sublimate your ego, you are the king.
I think your wife is a very fortunate woman. I think she is.
And, so, the old story about, I think it's Jackie Mason, the famous comedian.
I don't know the story. Tell the story.
I'm Mr. Big in the office. I'm the captain of industry. I have my corporate jet, and I have my private limousine, and everybody bows down. And I come home, and my wife says to me, "Schmuck, take out the garbage."
Wife doesn't do that. You told me last time. She has a lovely dinner waiting for you when you come home. And
she does.
And you've been married over 40 years, so that's pretty good. Hello?
Hello. Are you
okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got disconnected for a minute, but I think we're back.
So my wife had a recent birthday party, and I was trying to make a little toast to her, and I listed, my rehearsal was, what can you say about a woman who? And I listed all of these wonderful things about her.
Oh.
And I said this is a wonderful story. I said, we eat home several nights a week. My wife is a wonderful cook, and because we're very conscious of our weight and our physical conditioning, our menu is very simple. We always start with a salad. We live in California. And then we have, chicken or fish or poultry or, rarely beef, but always a salad. And for over 40 years, I have never eaten the same salad twice. Now,
what
can you put in a salad? A lettuce, a cucumber, tomato. But there's always some original touch, something new, a different flavor, something I never tasted before. And so the salad is just an example of if you remain creative.
Yes.
And you remain engaged and you remain interested and you remain motivated. I mean, there's no end to the love between two people.
Well, that's a beautiful metaphor, actually. We've come to half past the hour, so we need to take a break. And I just love that story, Dr. Danoff. So we'll come back and talk a little more about the super potent man. And we'll also talk about, performance anxiety and delaying ejaculation and all of that that people want to hear about. Maybe also we tease the audience with porn stars and how they're the opposite of what you're talking about in terms of super potent. But anyway, everybody stay with us and we'll be right back. Thank you.
Cosa leggerai? Con che libro affascini il tuo cuore? E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore?
Ma i tuoi piedi
We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm here with Dr. Dudley Danoff, and I will write this when I do a summary of the show, but you can go to his website to read more about him and his book, Penis Power. The website is penispowerbook.com, and boy, if you get this book, you're going to learn a lot. You should get it if you're a woman. You should especially get it if you're a man. You will learn a lot. And we teased you a little bit before the break about porn stars. Not only does Dr. Danoff see a lot of movie stars, but you say in your book, in the chapter, What is a Super Potent Man? In my practice, I've had many male pornographic film stars as patients, and you think that they're not at all super potent, and why is that?
Well, first of all, to do what a male porn star does, even in the best of light, has to be one of the most degrading things, you know, ever imaginable. I realize it's a billion-dollar business. I realize that many people enjoy porn for whatever reason it is. But as individuals, they're very, very sad people. You know, obviously, just as being an actor or an actress in legitimate or straight films, these people are mostly very attractive.
Mm-hmm.
They're in obviously excellent physical condition. They don't have a paunch, because if a man has a flat stomach, his appearance, the appearance of his penis appears to be longer. And on the bell-shaped curve, most of these men are on the upper side of the bell-shaped curve in terms of penis size, but most all of them need to be stimulated and use injection therapy or Viagra, Levitra, Cialis. But to perform, you know, on demand, in a set, camera, lighting, the grips, the makeup people, is very degrading. And most of these people are really inadequate people when it comes to personality.
Yeah, and you, exactly, and you write eloquently always, and often with some humor, but this is so true. To be a super potent man, you must view sex as an intimate pleasure, not as a sporting event. Sex is not show business. Hear, hear, Dr. Danoff.
It's not about how high do you jump and how quick do you run. It's about love and tenderness and caring and concern and the mutual pleasure. It's about as far from an athletic event as you can get. However,
yes,
you've got to be in good shape to have good sex. So you
right.
have to keep, especially in your aging population, your aging listeners, you got to keep yourself physically fit if you want to have a successful and fulfilling love life. You got to do your push-ups. You got to do your cardiovascular. You got to watch your weight. You got to stay away from the carbs. You've got to do high proteins. I mean, those are the things that make the difference.
Now, I've had a question. If a man works out a lot, does that mean he'll have good stamina in bed? And I think you have a saying in your field of urology, what's good for the heart is good for the penis. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, to have vigorous sex is about as vigorous an exercise as you can do. And if you're not physically fit, I mean, you just lie there like a lump on a log and nothing happens.
Well, for the woman, too, a study of some 500 men found that the number one quality they really appreciated in a woman was enthusiasm.
Absolutely.
And he can't be enthusiastic if you're not feeling well and just enjoying the play of sex, the joy of sex.
I ascribe to that 100%.
Yes. So you have lots of guys get concerned about premature ejaculation, delaying ejaculation, and you have one technique that I have actually never read about before, and I read all kinds of things. My personal library is filled with books about sexuality, and we'll get to that in a minute. That's the Valsalva maneuver?
Right.
Okay, but first, let's do the ones that, the delaying ejaculation, the things that you recommend the most, and they also happen to be the ones I recommend to my patients, but...
Well, as I say, ejaculatory dysfunction comes in two flavors. One is premature ejaculation, that is, it's over too quickly, and the other is delayed ejaculation. I just can't get it to work here.
Right.
If we take delayed ejaculation, a couple of things that I want to point out to your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to ejaculate is inversely proportional. I'll try to go slowly. Is inversely proportional to, number one, the number of times you ejaculate. So the more frequently you ejaculate, the more it will be delayed, the longer the refractory period.
Ah, yes.
And it's also in direct proportion to your age. So as a man ages, it becomes more and more difficult physiologically to ejaculate. So an older man can improve that by having intercourse infrequently. I mean, he could be a king, you know, once a week, when maybe as a very young man, he could have, you know, sex once an hour. So that's one way around ejaculation. Unfortunately, there is no medicine, there's no maneuver in which we can increase the volume of a man's ejaculate.
Mm-hmm.
Really depends on his own activity. There's no secret medicine. We can help him get and maintain an erection, either with the Viagra kinds of drugs or with what we call injection. But there's no way we can increase the volume of his ejaculate.
Right. And so men, as they're older, they shouldn't get concerned about that. But the most common ways that I suggest to my premature ejaculators is the start and stop method,
right,
and the squeeze technique. And you actually talk about this in some detail, and I think it's very good because some couples get confused about it.
Okay, so the way it works, you have the excitatory phase when a man is stimulated and gets an erection, and then he gets more and more excited until he reaches the point of what we call ejaculatory inevitability,
mm-hmm,
where he is so neurologically, physiologically, psychologically excited that the actual ejaculation is a reflex. He has no control once you pass that moment of ejaculatory inevitability.
Right.
Secret is, in terms of trying to learn how to delay ejaculation, is to try to play with your partner, excitement, then back off. Excitement and then back off. And try to prolong that pre-ejaculatory inevitability point when it becomes a reflex. So that's one way of doing it. The other way is what I call squeeze me, please me.
Yeah.
A man is brought close to ejaculatory inevitability and then he or his partner squeezes with some abruptness the glands or the tip of the penis not a painful squeeze, but an abrupt squeeze, and that will retard ejaculation. And then there's something we call the Valsalva maneuver. And
yes.
What that
talk
really
about that.
Means is you're increasing your intra-abdominal pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It's something analogous to, I don't want to get too graphic, to sort of having a bowel movement when you're having difficulty and you're kind of bearing down.
Yeah.
We don't have a bowel movement, but it's increasing, holding your breath and sort of increasing your abdominal pressure. And
pressure.
That will often retard ejaculation.
So what about the technique that I've read where the man will, they'll actually stop intercourse, he stands up, and his partner gently pulls on his scrotum, pulls downward.
Well, sure, that becomes an unpleasant, so anything like that will interrupt the momentum. But I like if he's going to stand up and withdraw, I like the squeeze me, please me, where he or his partner squeezes the glands. That I find to be very, very effective.
And I like what you wrote, because I never really thought about this before. I always thought that the woman should do it, but you say, some of my patients say they prefer to have their partner do the squeezing, but I have found it more reliable for the man to do it himself, since he is more familiar with his own penis and knows when and exactly how firmly to squeeze. That makes sense. Yeah.
I that's my personal preference.
Yes. But if you have your patient in your office, do you sometimes have his lover there too, and you'll actually show her how to do it? Is that, do you ever go that far?
Basically, I'm not, unlike you, I am not a sex therapist.
Right.
So, very often a patient will come with his partner, his or her partner, by the way. I might talk about it in a general sort of way, or recommend, that they read the book or they go to the website, penispowerbook.com.
Right, right.
I personally feel a little uncomfortable as a urologist sort of demonstrate or squeeze it like this. Or
right, right. And, of course, as a sex therapist, this is strictly no hands. I can't do this either, but I will give the people, the couple, homework assignments, home play assignments.
Right.
Recommending your book, because there's a very good description there of it, so that they can stay on track.
Well, I appreciate that compliment, it's obviously very, very delicate. And as I say in the book, and say to many of my patients, men are macho. Men do not want to demonstrate or articulate a penis weakness. And they'll always come in, never talking about ED. They'll come in talking about something else, or burning on urination, or free getting up at night. And then, as they are leaving the examining room and reach for the doorknob, they say, by the way, Dr. Danoff, I have this problem, with erections. What can you do about it? So, there are many things that we can do about ED, but men are not anxious to talk about it.
Not anxious. And sometimes I get the question from a woman saying, how should I, as a woman, react? And if there's either ED or PE, performance anxiety. And I'll answer, these are tips for proper bedroom dialogue when things go wrong. I'll say, it really helps to have a sense of humor and take it lightly. As I said before, this is sex, after all, not brain surgery. And then, of course, talking is the real key.
I think that the communication, if there's a problem, either medical or physical or psychological, I think to talk about it and communicate it, you've got to bring it out. You've got to bring it out of the closet. You've got to put it all on the table, or put it all on the top of the bed sheets, and you've really got to discuss it. And that's the way you solve a problem.
Yes, and to assure the guy, and this can be done in good sex talk, that this isn't about performance or perfection. This is about relating and having some fun. And then some guys will pleasure their partners with cunnilingus, which many women really like. And during that time, some of these guys report that their penises take a nap. But then I find that they can be reassured that they can get that erection back, even if it does take a nap while they're performing cunnilingus. Is that true? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, the flip side of cunnilingus is oral sex for a male. Now, the most about that is it's really twofold, and I'm talking physiologically.
Right.
It's number one, a great it's a great sacrifice for a woman because, you know, what's in it for a woman? Not much. But the second thing, the word blow, which it sometimes is referred to, has nothing to do with it. It's quite the opposite. It's a suck. And
right.
What the sucking mechanism does, it creates a vacuum, a venous vacuum, so that it actually forces blood into the venous system by creating a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a device which looks a little bit like something out of the Murat Sad called a vacuum erection device, where a man actually puts his penis into what looks like a plastic cylinder and creates negative filling pressure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then the penis fills passively, and then they put a little constricting band around the base of the penis, and they create quite an effective erection. So, you know, there's two sides to the same coin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some women will actually report some real pleasure, and even rare women having an orgasm while performing fellatio. And I think it has to do with the woman's attitude about, I have this sort of pleasure power over my man. I can bring him this sort of pleasure with my lips and my mouth and my tongue. And I've always disliked blowjob because you don't blow.
No,
and as I just described, for some women, it's not a job either. So.
It's definitely a misnomer.
Yeah. How did you know how it started? I have no idea how it came to be called that.
I don't have the answer to that question.
Okay.
I don't have the answer to a lot of questions, but that's what I...
Oh, but you have the answer to many, many questions. So this brings us to some of your final words, which you have... Oh, wait, before we get to final words, I did want to just talk a little bit about stress and sex. And in your book, Performance Anxiety, When It's All in Your Head, and on page 138, you say stress can interfere with penis power, but at the same time, exercising your penis power is a terrific way to eliminate stress. So it's got the minus and it's got the plus.
Right.
Would you please expand on that?
Stress mm-hmm. of kind, anger of any kind,
mm-hmm.
Those things have to be compartmentalized. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure I didn't invent this, but I do ascribe to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a tough day at the office, if you've had people cursing at you on the stopped highway traffic on the freeway, if you have any anger, if you have any anxiety, you got to just put that in a little box, seal that box, put it outside the bedroom door, because any of those are what I call erection killers. What we want to hear is sweet music, sweet sounds. We want to hear, we want to have a great aroma of a perfume or a flower.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
all those other things are just a complete no-no.
Mm-hmm. And also, cortisol must really impact the erection.
Yeah, I mean, if you're anxious, what happens is cortisol is a very potent vasoconstrictor.
Ah, yes.
You know, flight or fear, your eyes constrict down, and what you want is you want the maximum amount of vasodilation. You want all those vessels to be wide open, and you want the maximum blood flow to go down there to your loins and not be angered and all stressed up, because it's just not going to work.
Well, we have about 5-6 more minutes to this program, and you had toward the end of your book a final word to women and a final word to men, and I think once again, you're being extremely articulate and wise and wise. And I like how you start your final word to women on page 308. Treat his penis with respect, and it will serve you with dignity. Women who know about penises, and especially their lover's penis, and they like that penis that's attached to the man they love. It's a wonderful thing and a fascinating thing. I find penises quite fascinating because they change so much from the flaccid to the erect, and they react to whatever's going on.
Absolutely.
In a sensitive way. But what else would you say to women before we get to the final word to men?
Well, I think that women, you know, who know how to attend to their men's penises have a better relationship and better sex. And if they take, you know, more time trying to look at attractive men and use it directly to satisfy their sexual needs, and it works obviously mentally and physically, they will retain far greater fulfillment in their personal lives, in their sexual lives. And, you know, again, I don't want to misconstrue that as being a chauvinistic remark, but it isn't.
No, it isn't. And I'm going to guess that not only does your wife make salads, I don't know how she's done this, different one each night for 40 years, but she's creative and she's loving, and I bet she takes care of herself and then takes better care of you. You don't have to give any details, but I bet in general she takes care of herself.
Well, I have to take the Fifth Amendment on that one, so...
Oh, right. But I mean in terms of being attractive.
That's obvious. You don't... Not sleeping with the same woman for more than 40 years and able to write a book like this, which has a lot of humor, and to, you know, speak to you for an hour with, you know, both intelligence and knowledge and humor without being happy at home.
Yes, and that's why I self-disclosed at the top of the show, because while I haven't been fortunate enough to have 40 years, I have a great relationship. After being widowed for a number of years, I found this great guy, and it enables me to be a much more authentic sex therapist and a sexual cheerleader for people, for my patients.
Yeah.
And I think you may have similar dynamics. But you have, for your final word to men, it's all about heightened self-awareness. Self-awareness about one's manhood in general and one's penis in particular.
Well, it's about a lot of things. It's about anxiety and enhancing the quality, you know, of your existence in every respect. It's to stay as young as your penis. And I close the book with something. I'm just going to take a moment to read to you and your listeners.
Yeah, please do.
And this is the final sentence. It says, "I truly believe that a wise man would rather be a pauper and use his penis like a king than be a king who is incapable of exercising and sharing his right to penis power."
Bravo. So very, very true. And I think you've helped so many people in the listening audience. I encourage you to get Dr. Danoff's book, Penis Power, The Ultimate Guide to Male Sexual Health. You will learn a lot, because we really do want to banish stress from the bedroom and make sex fun again. I can't stress this enough, that we want sex to be about play, stress reduction, and just fun. And don't you think your patients that are able to do this are much healthier overall?
Oh, absolutely. there's only a couple of ways to exercise your liver. You know, one is to laugh, and the other is to exercise. And as a Chinese doctor told me, the third is to get an acupuncture. But laughing is a great curative for everything.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Dr. Danoff, thank you for your generosity in giving us another hour on Love, Lust, and Laughter. I appreciate it so much.
Well, my pleasure, and I hope to do it again.
Good. I hope so, too. I'll be back in touch with you maybe like in 6 months. Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right.
Okay, great. Thanks again. And goodbye, everybody. We'll be back same place, same time next week. And I'll have a little more unusual show next week, so be sure and tune in. Bye-bye, everybody.